Welcome to Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the rare disease community.
Hello, and welcome to the Rare Care Podcast. This is your host, Larry Luxner, Senior Correspondent for Rare Disease Advisor. We're at the American College of Rheumatology's 2025 ACR Convergence in Chicago, and our special guest is Dr. Eric Madison of the Mayo Clinic College of Medicine and Science. Dr. Madison is the winner of this year's Presidential Gold Medal, the highest award the ACR can bestow. It recognizes outstanding achievements in rheumatology over an entire career. Congratulations on this honor, Dr. Madison. Thank you for speaking with us today.
Thank you, Larry.
Where to start? This is a career, and there's a lot to talk about, and we have a number of issues today. Let's start by maybe you can explain why you got this award.
Well, the chief reason for the award is twofold. One is for scientific achievement, and the other is contributions to our professional organization, the American College of Rheumatology.
Can you elaborate on that, scientific achievements? And
yes.
Then I want to ask you specifically about the ACR.
So in my career, I have dedicated my life and my investigation to the study of complex autoimmune diseases. Among these diseases are vasculitis, which occurs in many different forms, all of which are actually considered to be rare diseases. That includes ANCA-associated vasculitis, like GPA, as well as giant cell arteritis and many others. What I have done in my career with these diseases is to pursue studies of their biology, of their frequency, that is their epidemiology, to understand how frequent they are, but also what organs they affect, how they affect individuals in their lives, how it affects how they are able to work and to enjoy their hobbies and their families, and to study drugs that are designed or intended to help to calm down the disease and get the disease under control so that the disease doesn't manage the patients, so that the patients can have a life that is as little encumbered as possible by these very rare and also very difficult diseases. Another area that I have worked in very much is the area of lung disease as it occurs in rheumatic diseases. So we understand that there is, for example, a rare disease which is called idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis. But many people don't realize that idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis-like disease, so resembling idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, and other forms of lung disease occur in patients with rheumatic diseases. And that includes patients who have ANCA-associated vasculitis, but even diseases like scleroderma and diseases like rheumatoid arthritis. In my career, pursued a program to not only understand how frequent these diseases are in the population, but how frequent the different manifestations are of these diseases, and try to learn about the biology of the diseases. So pursuing a laboratory program, for example, studying the effects of different kinds of genes on the occurrence of these diseases, and studying the influence of drugs that might influence the disease course in mice, has been really important to getting an understanding of the basic biology of these diseases and translating that into development of drugs and study of drugs that might be helpful for managing the diseases, such as antifibrotics, but also other forms of anti-inflammatory disease modifying drugs as well, and even chemotherapies sometimes.
Dr. Madison, what led you to go into medicine in the first place, and specifically to become a rheumatologist?
My first contact actually with medicine was when I worked as an orderly in college. And I did that because I was interested in medicine, but it was a job. And I thought, as I pursued that medicine would be something that would be attractive to me, to help patients, to understand disease, and to understand how disease affects people. And so that's what really got me started. And I applied consequently to medical school. In medical school, I had general training, as everyone does in medical school. And then I did a residency in internal medicine. It was in that time that I became familiar with the field of rheumatology. And all of the, for me as a young physician, fascinating disease spectrum of rheumatic diseases. But also, I became almost immediately familiar with the idea that the treatments for these diseases were really poor, were really inadequate, and that there was a lot to be done and learned to improve treatments, to improve the lives of patients who have the diseases. And so the fascination with the field is what got me into rheumatology.
Wow. And specifically, I understand you have more than 350 publications under your name, including 6 books. And I know you have a particular interest in the history of rheumatology.
Yes, that's true. My publications reflect my interests in science, in the clinical presentations of disease and how disease affects people. As I have studied the diseases, I am also interested in how the diseases were recognized, how our understanding of disease has developed. That has led me back to old literature to see what clinicians 100 and 200 and even more years ago were seeing that they found fascinating, that caused them to wonder about why these diseases occur. And so one example is in vasculitis. I actually had the opportunity to evaluate and translate the first account of vasculitis, polyarteritis nodosa, which was first described by Adolf Kussmaul and Rudolf Meyer in Germany in 1866 into English. And that led me on a journey of understanding the contributions of some other people in rheumatic diseases that were less accessible to American audiences because they're written in other languages. And so I investigated and translated accounts of other diseases like Behçet's disease into English.
That's discovered by a Turkish physician, right?
It was described by a Turkish physician and famously comprehensively. What you learn when you pursue studies like this is that very often the person who is identified as the first describer really isn't, that oftentimes there are others in other countries who have described that disease too, even before the signal contribution is recognized. And often the language barrier is one of the reasons why the recognition doesn't come about.
And some of these diseases are relatively new, like, for example, IgG4-related disease, which I understand has only been known as such for the last 20 years or less.
Yes, that's right. And so that's one of the exciting things in medicine is that the disease has probably been around a long time, but we didn't know how to identify it. We didn't have the tools to understand it. And that is something that has been, in the last years, accelerating. And that's been very exciting because a lot of very strange diseases and strange syndromes that we could describe clinically had an unknown biological basis. But with the new tools that we have for investigating, for example, the genome and proteins that genes produce, we're starting to understand that a lot of these diseases actually are genetic in one way or the other. Now, not necessarily inheritable, but due to changes in genes, due to gene mutations that cause them. And we are able to identify a lot more of these all the time. It seems like every few months, there's another syndrome that's understood on the basis of its genetics.
Okay, you're a past president of the Rheumatology Research Foundation. And this year marks the foundation's 40th anniversary. Can you talk about its role in funding research and why the foundation is so important to the field?
Yes. The Rheumatology Research Foundation of the American College of Rheumatology is actually the largest funder outside of the federal government of research in rheumatology. And its role is critical because its funding is dedicated to rheumatologists and rheumatologic diseases. And so it has a very strong focus. It is actually, as an organization, the biggest funder of any subspecialty in the United States. There's no other subspecialty that has such a large funding portfolio, which we need to supplement and enhance and even foster the research goals that we have for understanding disease and the careers of people who are pursuing research in our diseases. And especially in these times when the NIH funding is under threat for a variety of reasons, it's really critical that we step up and provide our investigators with the funding that they need to continue their career so that the important work that they have been doing is not interrupted. And that's a big threat right now because of the current environment. And so we are doing everything that we can to bridge the shortfall that is sort of artificially occurring because of funding withdrawal in many cases.
Have you ever seen in your career science under threat as it is today?
I have not. I think this is a unique time. I think there's always been skepticism about science, and I think that science itself lives on skepticism. That, after all, is part of the scientific method, that we investigate a hypothesis that we have, or even a truth that we think might be there, but we're not so sure about, but we have an organized way of going about understanding whether it's something is true or whether it's not true through the scientific method. We don't make assumptions about what the conclusion should be. We make a start with our hypothesis, and then we come to whatever conclusion that our study supports. And we don't start with a conclusion that something is the case, that X causes Y, and without critically investigating it. And so I think that there is, in the current environment, unfortunately, a increasing tendency to believe things that are not well-founded. And what the consequence of that is that the science that would support advances is truncated. And the advances that have been made, for example, in, let's say, RNA vaccinations, the use of RNA, one of the greatest advances in recent years in medical science, which demonstrably has reduced the number of people who get critical viral illnesses and reduced deaths overall, is under threat.
I was about to ask you about vaccinations, but we're almost out of time. I did want to ask you quickly, though, about medical misinformation online. One of the speakers yesterday talked about this as a big problem. People basically not trusting the medical establishment and going online to get answers. They should be asking their doctors these questions.
Yes, I agree with you. It's one of the blessings and also one of the sometimes pitfalls of the extensive information that's out there on the internet and readily available. There is a lot of good quality evidence and information that's available to the public and to patients, but there is no screening that takes place. And so in many cases, the misinformation is consequential for bad decision making in medicine, and the misinformation directs you to think in a certain way when often common sense or known science informs you otherwise. So it's a very big problem, and it's really critical that patients have the opportunity to discuss the information without bias with their physicians and other experts, and you can identify then what might be misinformation and information, I think, in an objective way. And it also, though, means that it's incumbent on physicians to be truthful and to be respectful of their patients in terms of the patient's opinions and the patient's desires. And oftentimes it's really possible to work with patients and understanding what is helpful and what is not helpful out of the information that they gain, for example, out of the internet.
So we're just about out of time, but I wanted to ask as a final thought regarding your award and your recognition and any advice for young doctors coming up.
I think one of the chief recognitions of the award is for me how much my career was influenced by my patients and by my colleagues, and how much also what I have learned and been able to do and been able to teach has influenced others. And not only the science that has come out of my career and the contributions that I've been able to make to our college, the American College of Rheumatology, in its mission of advancing rheumatology care for our patients, but also personally, it has had important, and for me, has been personally very gratifying.
Thank you so much. We're just at a bit of time. We've been talking with Dr. Eric Madison of the Mayo Clinic College of Medicine and Science. Dr. Madison is the winner of this year's Presidential Gold Medal by the American College of Rheumatology. This is Larry Luxner for Rare Disease Advisor.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.